Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 To read a whole bunch of verses because they don't have purports through text 31 starting with text 22. You won't have much of an appetite for breakfast after doing all this. Text 22. Under the scorching sun, the criminal has to pass through roads of hot sand with forest fires on both sides. He is whipped on the back by the constables, that's the Yamadutas, because of his inability to walk. And he is afflicted by hunger and thirst, but unfortunately there's no drinking water, no shelter, and no place to rest on the road. 23. While passing on that road to the abode of Yamaraj, he falls down in fatigue and sometimes becomes unconscious. But he is forced to rise again. In this way, he is very quickly brought to the presence of Yamaraj. Text 24. Thus, he has to pass 99,000 yojanas within 2 or 3 moments. Because time is relative. And he is at once engaged in the torturous punishment which he is destined to suffer. Purport. One yojana is calculated to be how many miles?
Eight miles.
And he has to pass along a road which is therefore as much as 792,000 miles. He's moving really fast. He's moving in 2 to 3 seconds. Such a long distance is passed over within a few moments only. The subtle body is covered by the constables so that the living entity can pass such a long distance quickly and at the same time tolerate the suffering. This covering, although material, is of such fine elements that material scientists cannot discover what the coverings are made of. To pass 792,000 miles within a few moments seems wonderful to the modern space travelers. They have so far traveled at the speed of 18,000 miles per hour. But here we see that a criminal passes 792,000 miles within a few seconds only. Although the process is not spiritual, but material. And purport. Aside from the subtle covering, whatever that is, the whole experience is moments, but it doesn't feel like moments. It feels like a lifetime. So, because lower planets, compared to the few moments, is up here, and then there's heavenly realms, and then there's Brahmaloka. So, Prabhupada would say this over and over. Here, 6 months compared to heaven is 1 day, and 1 night is then another 6 months. So 1 year here equals 1 day there in heavenly planets. And then Brahma's time is, you know, relatively, you know, at a different scale too. So down at the lower planets, it's something like in dreams. We're in the mode of ignorance. And what feels like a really long time from this plane, it's moments. So it's going on in a subtle plane. That's one thing. And there's a subtle covering over the subtle body of some kind of makeup that makes it, and it enables it to happen. But the experience of the difficulty seems like a lifetime. Next, 25. He is placed in the midst of burning pieces of wood, and his limbs are set on fire. Of course, this is subtle. But like you experience something in a dream, feels like it's happening. Emotionally and physiologically. In some cases, he is made to eat his own flesh or have it eaten by others. Report. From this, and he hasn't even gotten to the hellish planets yet. He's just getting ready. From this verse, through the next three verses, the description of punishment will be narrated. The first description is that the criminal has to eat his own flesh, burning with fire, or allow others, like himself or present there, to eat. In the last great war, people in concentration camps sometimes ate their own stool, so there's no wonder that the Yama Sadhana, the abode of Yamaraj, one who had a very enjoyable life eating others' flesh has to eat his own flesh. Okay, get ready for breakfast. Text 26. His entrails are pulled out by the hounds and vultures of hell, even though he is still alive to see it. And he is subjected to torment by serpents, scorpions, gnats, and other creatures that bite him. Text 27. Next, his limbs are lopped off and torn asunder by elephants. He's hurled down from hilltops, and he is also held captive, either in water or in a cave. 28. Men and women whose lives were built upon indulgence in illicit sex are put into many kinds of miserable conditions in the hells known as Tamishra, Anta Tamishra, and Rourava. Purport. Materialistic life is based on sex life. The existence of all the materialistic people who are undergoing severe tribulation in the struggle for existence is based on sex. Therefore, in Vedic civilization, sex life is allowed only in a restricted way, semicolon. It is for the married couple and only for begetting children. But when sex life is indulged in for sense gratification, illegally and illicitly, both the man and the woman await severe punishment in this world or after death. In this world also, they are punished by virulent diseases like syphilis and gonorrhea, and in the next life, as we see in this passage of Srimad Bhagavatam, they are put into different kinds of hellish conditions to suffer. In Bhagavad Gita, first chapter, illicit sex life is also very much condemned, and it is said that one who produces children by illicit sex is sent to hell. It is confirmed here in the Bhagavatam that such offenders are put into hellish conditions of life in Tamishra, Anta Tamishra, and Rourava. Lord Kapila continued, "My dear mother, it is sometimes said that we experience hell or heaven on this planet, for hellish punishments are sometimes visible on this planet also." Purport. Sometimes unbelievers do not accept these statements of scripture regarding hell. They disregard such authoritative descriptions. Lord Kapila therefore confirms them by saying that these hellish conditions are also visible on this planet. It's not that they are only on the planet where Yamaraj lives. On the planet of Yamaraj, the sinful man is given the chance to practice living in the hellish conditions which he will have to endure in the next life. And then he is given a chance to take birth on another planet to continue his hellish life. For example, if a man is to be punished to remain in hell and eat stool and urine, then, first of all, he practices such habits on the planet of Yamaraj, and then he is given a particular type of body, that of a hog, so that he can eat stool and think that he is enjoying life. It is stated previously that in any hellish condition, the conditioned soul thinks he is happy. Otherwise, it would not be possible for him to suffer hellish life. I'm going to read a bunch of these because I don't want to go back into it again. Text 30. After leaving this body, the man who maintained himself and his family members by sinful activities suffers a hellish life, and his relatives suffer also. Report. The mistake of modern civilization is that man does not believe in the next life. But whether he believes or not, the next life is there, and one has to suffer if one does not lead a responsible life in terms of the injunctions of authoritative scriptures like the Vedas and Puranas. Species lower than human beings are not responsible for their actions because they are made to act in a certain way. But in the developed life of human consciousness, if one is not responsible for his activities, then he is sure to get a hellish life as described herein. Text 31. He goes alone to the darkest regions of hell after quitting the present body, and the money he acquired by envying other living entities is the passage money with which he leaves this world. Passage money. Pateyaha. Purport. When a man earns his money by unfair means and maintains his family and himself with that money, the money is enjoyed by many members of the family, but he alone goes to hell. A person who enjoys life by earning money or by envying another's life and who enjoys with family and friends will have to enjoy alone. The resultant sinful reactions accrued from such violent and illicit life, for example, if a man secures some money by killing someone and with that money maintains his family, those who enjoy the black money earned by him are also partially responsible and are also sent to hell, but he who is the leader is especially punished. The result of material enjoyment is that one takes with him the sinful reaction only and not the money. The money he earned is left in this world and he takes only the reaction. Paragraph. In this world also, if a person acquires some money by murdering someone, the family is not hanged, although its members are sinfully contaminated. But the man who commits the murder and maintains his family is himself hanged as a murderer. The direct offender is more responsible for sinful activities than the indirect enjoyer. The greatly learned scholar Chanakya Pandit says, therefore, that whatever one has in his possession had better be spent for the cause of Sat, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because one cannot take his possessions with him. They remain here, and they will be lost. Either we leave the money, or the money leaves us, but we will be separated. The best use of money, as long as it is within our possession, is to spend it to acquire Krishna consciousness. Okay, that's enough of that. Well, I've tried preface this section by explaining that this is a very scary section, sobering section, along with a few others. The fifth canto goes further into detail of this is in Yamaraja's abode. And then after Yamaraja's abode comes their destination. The destination is the destination is the hellish planets. And then there's the experience of a whole lifetime of suffering, the way that Prabhupada had explained it is. The suffering is so brutal that they're ready for anything. You know, get me out of this condition. Take the body of a worm. Yes, yes, get me out of here. Body of an insect. Yes, yes, anything. It's horrible. So, how long does it take? Well, first of all, it's illusory. But, you know, the experience is as if it's a whole lifetime. But from earthly planet perspective, it's a flash. And then, you know, from eternal perspective, it's not even a flash. Because it's illusory. So, what is it? Well, it's Maya. And there's darker sides of Maya, and there's lighter sides of Maya. But what's Maya? Maya is that which is not. It's an appearance of something. It's like the whole picture of Dharma. We did this. We'll do it again. Dharma, we do it up and down, or we can do it left and right. On the earthly realm, there's the unregulated, the Bhagavad Gita's language, like a pyramid, the unregulated. Then there are those that understand, well, life is meant to be regulated under the codes of the Vedas or then the codes of scripture. So some voluntarily submit themselves to the codes of scripture. Largely, it's to reduce the misery of material existence and to increase well-being and prosperity. Karmakanda. It's chapter 3, Bhagavad Gita. The principles of Karmakanda at the beginning. Then it moves into Karma Yoga. So, to regulate so that life will be more peaceful and I'll be able to prosper nicely, religiously. The objective is the same as the unregulated. I want to enjoy. But this is the better way to enjoy and less suffering. So that's good. It's a good program. Prosper and less suffering. Gradually, as the performers of Karma Kanda become a little purified, understand there's a destination after this life. So like the Prabhupada is saying here, they don't understand generally life after this life. Or what's the word? Anyway. Life after death, that's it. Life after death. So life after death implies what is it that's going on after this life? It's something other than elements. It's a non-physical something that continues after this life. So from Karmakanda rituals, it's not only prosper in this life, but the destination in heaven. There's something that goes on to that next situation. But then that work is binding, and so that those prescribed duties, then the fruit becomes offered to the Supreme. At least, you know, awakening of that idea of offering the results of my religious activities and my duties in life to the Supreme, Karma Yoga. And then Sat Kama Karma Yoga. I do that because I'll prosper even more. I'll benefit even more by that offering unto the Supreme, contact with the Supreme, further contact, better, more clear connection with the Supreme is established, and then one becomes purified to the point of Nishkam Karma Yoga, and just keeps going. The keeps going is more interest in the soul, the true identity of self, and then comes the Gamakanda section, then comes in association with devotees, one may be very fortunate, like our discussion yesterday evening at the temple. Through association with devotees, it's not just I'm spirit soul, but there's a supreme soul in relationship with the supreme soul, and entering into activities in relation with the supreme soul, step by step. So the Dharma is meant to take one to that position. Meant its intention. For there are people that won't take shelter of the personality of Godhead, no way. But there are some people that allow themselves to be regulated because there's perks. I'll suffer less and I'll prosper more. So that's a good program. Something like, people that, it's a classic, especially for having lived in a temple. There are certain people that they come for 5 seconds or maybe 10 seconds. They come to the temple on a regular basis, and they do their whatever their particular thing is. And it's very clear that it's an investment. They're doing something because they're going to get something. So they say some prayers, they put something on the altar, some gift, put something in the hundi box, and off they go. So they did their religious deed because it'll help them suffer less and prosper more. So I'm giving a dollar in the hundi box, and you get back $100. It's a good investment. Guaranteed. I read the scriptures and I have faith in the scriptures. The scriptures say so. That's prakriti bhakta. It's still devotion because God is being acknowledged, but it's materialistic. And then gradually. So if elevation can, even from that, through good association, particularly the process of hearing from qualified persons, then one can become elevated. The potency is there for that to happen. So even these beginning, the point is, even these beginning standards of Dharma, they have the internal purposes to take one to Krishna. It may not be explicit, it's implicit. And what does Krishna want? Well, Krishna doesn't want to see the living entities suffer. He wants to see them happy. Like a loving parent wants to see their dependent happy. So there's a range of things that are provided. Like, it's one of the common questions is, why are all these other things? It's confusing. There's this and there's that. Why not just one thing? Because it all takes you to the one thing. Because some people won't do the one thing. And then what about them? What's going to be beneficial for them? So the unregulated. The unregulated is what this chapter is describing. There's consequences. What's their life like during their life is not happiness. That's the early part of the chapter, and then the body wears down, and the attachments are there, and all that section we've discussed earlier, and then the subtle body is taken by the Yamadutas, and that's not nice. And they're taken to the court of Yamaraj, and that's not nice. And then there's the hellish planets, and that's not nice. So it's a bad program being an unregulated person. Better to be a regulated person. It's not just to scare you. It's true. It's something like a law-abiding person doesn't need to be scared. If you break the law, there's consequences. But some people are sin, is what's behind it, the root of it, is ignorance. We discussed this. Ignorance of tattva, tattva vibram, tattva, the ignorance of spiritual reality. Covered by the, and how does that happen? Because I want to ignore the Supreme. It's a choice I made. And so covering is there. Because of covering, we can't blame the person who provided the covering. We chose. It's so. Then it gets darker and darker and darker, depending on degrees of the sinful activity, like is mentioned here. The provider that does illegal and illicit activities to provide for family, that's the greater sufferer. The others are implicated, but less, you know, the culpability is less. And when the culpability is greater, the suffering is greater. But go back to the absolute standard, and it's all illusion anyway. So what's the purpose of suffering in illusion? It's to remind us that this isn't this. The further we go, say it the other way, the closer we go to being in harmony with the Supreme, up to the point of completely in harmony with the Supreme in pure love of God, that's our natural condition. And that's the Satchit Ananda condition. The further away we go from that position, the kingdom of Maya gets darker and darker and darker. All the while, at least from the transcendental perspective, it's all illusory. It's all illusory. Here's an apple, and there's a mirror, and in the mirror there's a reflection of the apple. What's the substance of the reflection of the apple in the mirror? There's no substance. It looks like an apple, but there's no apple. It looks like an apple. So, similarly, there's no substance in... It's in the first verse and purport of the Bhagavatam. Substance and category, Prabhupada calls it. There's Latin terms and there's Sanskrit terms. It's a classic philosophical position that this world is category. There's no substance here. It looks like the real thing. We identify with that which is not and find our happiness and distress over here in the reflection. And the reflection, just thinking about your question about punishment, it reflects the degree to which we have turned away from Krishna, the severity of being out of harmony with the Supreme. In viciousness, and from man's law, but from God's law, the further we go from God's law, the further in darkness we've gone. And then the life corresponds with a life of darkness. It's miserable. Severely miserable. And how Maya works, just thinking of a conversation I had with riding Southwest Airlines from New York to Chicago. You're on Southwest Airlines, people can sit wherever they want to sit. Mm-hmm. So I like sitting on an aisle, and there was an empty space next to me. Somebody was at the window. So, in short, a young college student from Columbia University chose to sit next to me. Usually, it's nice being a Hare Krishna devotee. It's usually, that's where the empty seat is. People don't like that. They sit somewhere else. Anyway, she sat right next to me. And she was reading the Bible. So after some time, some conversation, could you, tell me a little bit about what you're doing? She asked. And she's Christian, and we got into a discussion about, I did what Prabhupada did, can you share with me what your views are on the biblical teaching that thou shalt not kill? Are you living your life that way? Because being Christian means acting according to what is pleasing to Christ. And, you know, why is it okay? Well, you know, it doesn't specifically say in the Bible, don't eat meat. So, I said, what about Genesis? It says this is what is meant for man. It doesn't say in the other one. I said, well, that's there. But then, you know, she took me through verse after verse after verse from the New Testament of the Bible down to something, I forget, Paul, one of the books of the New Testament, saying that, you know, a person should not be discriminated against receiving the mercy of Christ based upon how they live their life. Everyone is eligible to receive the mercy of Christ. I said, fine. Everyone is eligible to receive the mercy of Christ, or the mercy of God, or His representatives. Fantastic. Now, you have choices. It got down to, one, two, three. One, being a Christian means doing that which is going to be pleasing to the person you wish, that you love and wish to serve, Christ. Yes. So now, supposing he's holding a lamb in his arms, and you say, Christ, may I have that lamb to eat? What's he going to say? And she said, well, I think he'd say, go ahead. I said, you're not a starving person. You're one of the university students. You have means to eat whatever you'd like. You could eat this, or you could eat that. And, you know, you need some systems in order to live your life and do your work. What would he say? And because your choices should be what's pleasing to him, right? Let's just think about it. And, you know, she wasn't wavering. She was very clear. You know, Paul says you shouldn't discriminate against the receiver of Christ's mercy because of your living habits. Okay. No problem. That's, you know, being set. Now, one who has access to the mercy of Christ wants to do what he wants. That's love. And through that, you love of God. Anyway, we just think about it. So, this is a really, you know, sincere, bright, not, you know, miserable, you know, upside down person, very clear person, covered. So the coverings of Maya are significant. So what to speak of somebody that's not so fortunate as this young girl. And when people do those things, there's less culpability than if you know what you're doing and you do something, than if you don't know what you're doing and you do something. But still, those that don't know, those that are covered, there's still culpability. And what's that culpability? Well, it's not just you've done something bad, so smack. That's not the spirit. God is vengeful God. That's one view that some people have. God is a wrathful God. You cross God, you're going to get smacked. So don't cross God. You go to hell. So, not like that. It's intended to bring the person to a better position. And, you know, ultimately to the position of perfection. Dharma is there for that reason. And violators of Dharma are, the signal is, it's not okay. And violate Dharma. There's consequences. But don't violate Dharma. It's very severe. Hellish plan is very severe, but the message isn't. The Bhagavatam is not teaching be obedient out of fear. That's a mode of ignorance, motivation. I'll stop being criminal because by being criminal, there's severe reaction for being criminal. And that can work for people that are in the mode of ignorance. But a person that's inclined towards knowledge, it's not a choice of preference. The choice of preference is inspired by the quality of goodness, that which, where there's light, and where things are, where compassion, you know, values of goodness prevail. Not harming others, being regulated in one's habits, abiding by the codes of the scripture, being interested in knowledge of transcendence and so forth. But persons that the mode of goodness is very weak, the other is there, and their reaction to the other may be, oh my God, I'm going to be good. Because the consequence of being bad is too much. So people may be law-abiding or dharmic if they think, you know, the mode of good, mode of ignorance motivator. That this is suffering, I don't want to suffer. Anyway, the modes of nature are very curious and complicated. But some people need to hear, just like King Pujinibari. When Narada came to visit King Pujinibari, or when Angira Muni came to visit King Chittaketu, they understood that the audience is incapable of hearing transcendental knowledge, so they have to give something else. And part of the something else was, at least with King Pujinibari, was the allegorical story of a king who was attached to fruitive activities, and then the consequences of those, a life of being attached to fruitive activities. And fortunately, King Pujinibari was sufficiently pious through allegory, he could understand. Then Narada explained the allegory, then he really got it. And he became situated in devotional service, not mixed with fruitive activities. So through hearing is sufficient. But some persons don't have that capacity to understand by hearing. Know what to do. You don't write them off or go out of existence, because the soul can't go out of existence, and the soul that has that propensity. So there has to be something else that helps remind them. And part of that is suffering, and people don't like to suffer. Bearing in mind the suffering is illusory as much as the happiness is illusory. The whole of material existence is illusory. It's not real existence. Real existence is our eternal life in service to Krishna, covered or colored by the modes of nature and prakriti, guna and prakriti. Very clever. Very ingenious how these basic elements work to create a life that's meant to bring the soul back to Krishna. At the same time, provide an opportunity to try to be a separate enjoyer that doesn't work, because the rebellious soul wants that. Very ingenious. Very scientific, not haphazard. Very complex. Very convincing. It looks real. We bought into it, it's real. And then the more you buy into it that it's real, the more that which is real gets to be fantasy. Or just dismissed. Godless civilization. That student that came to walk with us to the car, something that when you speak with him further, that if you're assuming he comes around again, gently, as best you can, try to help him understand, because I did it four times, and he just kept coming with another one and another one. It was something speculative. What do you think about this speculative? What do you think about that speculative? What do you think this could be a good one? And he's in the spiritual marketplace, there's all these speculative things. And I just kept saying, in different ways, there's descending knowledge, and it's flawless. This one is flawed. This one is flawless. So, you know, you want me to comment on, you know, this one. My response is, this one, please. Something that comes from an infallible source. If you want perfect knowledge, go to a perfect person. And they can give you perfect knowledge. You want imperfect knowledge? Go to the spiritual marketplace. There's lots of speculative endeavors, but that's not, it's not going to get you to where you want to go. It may make some connection. You may get something, but not where you want to go. What about chakra meditation? What about this one? What about that one? You don't even have to know what this one, that one is. But just that the principle of, there's so many ways to say it. You may have to say it in different ways, you know, 100 times. Maybe he'll get it. Because he seems sincere wanting to know. There's a verse by Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, quoted often, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Panchara Triki Vidimvina Ahai Kuntaki Harir Bhaktir Utpattayai Bhakalpate. That utpat means big disturbance. Speaking on spiritual subject without reference to this descending knowledge simply creates a disturbance. People are already disturbed. You want to become not disturbed. You want to become, you know, a experienced spiritualist. Do this one, not that one. You're like a kid in a candy store. You want to try this one, try that one, try the other one. You get sick to your stomach. Just do this one. At least, out of all the things that you're, you know, searching, add this one, see what happens. Make that connection with Krishna, see what happens. That's something genuine. And you feel it. If you're, you know, you're tuned in, you're not too much caught in this speculative space. Just, you know, experience the connection. There may be some power over here and some power. That's just a reflection. Then there's the powerhouse. Connect with the powerhouse. High voltage. You'll feel something. What about that one? Mm. Add that one to this one? You're very prone to speculation. It's our dharma. Okay.
Guru Maharaj is regarding punishment. So I see there are like at least three viewpoints regarding punishment. So there are those who don't want any punishment at all, like, or war or torture or any of these things, right? Like I remember once we invited long back an MIT student to our home. Very pleasant person, you know, very affable. But she sees the altar, she really likes it, and then suddenly her eyes went on Narsingadev, and we had a different picture with him tearing apart Hiranyakashipu, and she was like, what's that? And then I had to explain that, and then she couldn't relate to it at all, no matter how I tried to explain it. Because she wanted peace and no war, no punishment, no ugliness, no blood. So and she never came back. You know, that was the end of it. And then there are those who probably accept punishment as long as it is a tool to say serve justice, right? So if someone commits a horrible crime, okay. As long as they receive justice for that, I'm fine with that. Then there are those who go further to say, okay, punishment is a tool to rectify behavior or like today with torture and all that the government does with terrorists, you know, to glean more information and things like that. So there is a whole variety here. But the more I hear from these verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, I'm just going back to this question of what is purpose here, the underlying purpose. Is it justice primarily, or is it rectification of behavior or rectification of consciousness? But I'm not sure how these methods serve that purpose. If it's justice, it makes sense to me. Okay, if someone commits an abortion or kills an animal, they have to go through certain punishments in the hands of Yamaraj. Okay, that I can kind of wrap my head around that. But rectification, I'm not sure how it achieves that.
Torturing terrorists in order to get more information with the view that by getting that more information, innocent people will be saved. I don't buy into that, just personally. My value system, that bounces. Not okay. Some people, it's okay. You know, the principle of the end justifies the means. Getting some information that will save innocent people's lives and or unnecessary suffering. The end justifies the means. But he asked the question yesterday about rectification. Is the purpose of all of this rectification? And, you know, punishment doesn't guarantee rectification. It takes care of the justice part, but doesn't take care of the rectification part.
Mm-hmm.
The tendency will remain after that. You know, justice is done. The root is still there. Therefore, at least my understanding is, the additional purpose besides justice, you're not, like, for example, Lord Srinadev destroying Hiranyakashipu. Completely cleared the sinful reactions. It didn't take away the propensity. But then, when there is good association, to allow that person to then go further, and that, you know, the impression, at least, you know, in the ideal circumstance, the impression is, I don't want to do this again. Maybe a better example, or a good example, is Narada's contemplation of cursing Nalakovira Manipriva, that the thought process is described in the verses and purports. It's clear it was rectification, not just justice. And it worked. Now, it doesn't always work, because there's still free will choices. But the intended purpose behind that is to provide an opportunity where a good association, when a good association does come, that people won't revert to the other instead of, you know, the good association opportunity. So Krishna does this from within and without. That's my understanding is that. It's just like 10:11 Bhagavad Gita. The residual tendency, once becoming purified, there's still a residual tendency to do the same bad thing. Krishna says in that verse that he personally checks that. He takes away that residual tendency. He does it personally by the shining lamp of knowledge. He destroys the darkness of ignorance. The darkness of ignorance is that from which one does it again. But Krishna gives the shining lamp of knowledge. Illumines the soul. This is your position of real happiness. And then the soul makes the choice, I'm not going to do it again. I want the position. I want to be connected with Krishna. It's, you know, you can give that message, be connected with Krishna, that's your position of real happiness. and someone that hasn't received the, not only the justice part, but you know, the mercy of devotee association and the opportunity for accessing Krishna through devotional service, we'll do it again. So it's rectification. The intended purpose is, in addition to justice, is the opportunity for rectification. No guarantee. Yeah, I just say opportunity because the soul still has to say yes. The soul can say no. I value my independence too much and I don't want to let go of my independence. I don't want to submit to anybody. I'm independent. Then residual tendency. There's a detailed analysis of this that I'm spending some time with. Jiva Goswami's analysis of, you know, the byproduct of sin and offense, and you know, there's stages. And one of the stages, I forget the Sanskrit, but it's where one becomes attached to those things that are, that just destroy bhakti. It's something like Rupa Goswami's, you know, Shadir, Bhaktir, Vinashati. So there are things that, if the opportunity for bhakti arises, bhakti can be destroyed if there's these residual tendencies that we can revert to. And offense is like those things that, because bhakti is present, those other things, they're practically dormant. And an example is, I'll get back to your question, but it's addressing the question. The residual tendency is like when you delete a file in your computer and it goes into the waste bin. Recycle bin. So it's there in your computer, just you can't access it over here. But you know, if you want, there's this, you know, recycle bin, and there's a big sign that says, "Please restore me to the computer. Just click me, and I'll go right over there, and you can access me again." But like that, when there's the disposition of heart to again be offensive, due to the root of that is tattva vibram, ignorance of spiritual reality, then, and I make some offense, then those files you don't have to click, they just go back into the active position. And those residual tendencies come out again. But bhakti has a way of, has capacity to remove them, put them in the recycle bin, and then delete them from the recycle bin. You can't access them anymore. They're gone. And now, oh, I deleted that recycle bin. It's all gone. Gone. So the rectification is the providing that covered soul the opportunity to come to the bhakti position where the recycle bin is deleted. The residual tendencies are gone. And Krishna does that. The first part of the verse is Krishna does that when he sees the living entity wants to be in his relationship with me. I personally take care of him. Personally. It's very personal. We can't do it on our own. It's going to be maybe just hanging out in a recycle bin forever. And then we do some offense and there it goes back into our, you know, behavior pattern. Perfect example is Daksha, when he was, you know, beheaded, and you know, by cursing or offending Lord Shiva, and he pleaded for Lord Shiva for forgiveness, and then it was forgiven. So that was the justice, but the rectification part didn't take place. And so in his next life, he did the same thing again. He offended, and then all these other ugly, you know, propensities came out. You're moved from the recycle bin back to the sacrifice. So it's meant to bring one to the position again of our relationship with Krishna, at least the opportunity.
Opportunity.
Still I have to say yes. I can say no, or say maybe, let me think about it. Or I'll go back and forth. Yes, no. Therefore, devotee association connecting with devotional service is the purpose behind even the justice. But then, you know, devotees have to go out in sankirtan. Make themselves available for giving bhakti to others. However, you know, in the various forms that takes, just distribute prasada or something or something or something. Something, something. The carrier, and then the carriers are bhakti. They need to have proper consciousness of why they're doing what they're doing. I'm on a rescue mission. I'm the white knight and a white horse with my lance, and I'm going to touch people and they'll become not that. In a mode of service. So the purity of the deliverer of bhakti is very important. For just in terms of the effectiveness. But even if somebody is spoiled, if they somehow induce others to chant Krishna's name, that's beneficial. But somehow or other. So the spirit of the bhakta should, you know, aspire to become Shuddha Bhakta. Although far from it, aspire for that. Be the transparent instrument, and then that's nice. So the Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan is the crowning glory of the whole message of Srimad Bhagavatam. The benediction moon, the most beneficent form of the Lord. And those that connect with him are very, very fortunate. Something else? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I have a question from yesterday's
speech. Yeah, and I cut you off. But go ahead and ask it now. I knew I would be going to ask you to ask it today. Go ahead.
Thank you, Maharaj. So, yesterday, Atulya Mataji was talking about the terrorists, right? So, when they do the act, which is like, if you take the example of 9/11, so right at the time of when they were hitting it, they were calling for Allah. So
we don't know. We were assuming that.
Most of the cases, what we have seen or what we have heard of, is they call for the Lord. So is it the same effect that they'll have, which Ajamila had, or how different it manifests?
I can speak in principle. The variables aren't too many.
Yeah.
As far as I understand it, their idea is when you do jihad, you go to heaven because you're doing the work of Allah. Because these are bad people, and the work of Allah is to, you know, crush the bad people. You do the work of Allah, you go to heaven. And their idea of heaven is, who knows what their idea is. It's not our idea of Vaikuntha. The idea of heaven. To call the calling of the name, where, you know, there's 10 offenses. What Ajamila did was not within the scope of the 10 offenses. Correct? Do I need to elaborate? You got it?
Yeah.
Okay. This is what the 9/11 folks did is within the category of the 10 offenses. Sinning on the strength of chanting. So that's not, you know, that's not aparad. Distinct from namabhas. You understand the difference? Okay. So they don't get the same result that Ajamila got. Ajamila was namabhas. And theirs is namaparad. And they get, you know, there's consequences for namaparad. Okay.
Maharaj, suffering. So when you are talking about the hellish planets and the hog and how the hog thinks what it is doing is making it happy,
yeah.
And it thinks it's enjoying. I was thinking about suffering. It seems thinking about it, it seems like almost suffering is a bigger blessing than getting success or enjoyment, because if we get suffering, then we know we are in a bad situation, which is true even if we are getting enjoyment. And then when we know we are in a bad situation, we have more tendency to seek God.
Shelter. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, to amplify what you just said, in the fifth canto, describing the structure of the universe, in there's subterranean heavenly planets where enjoyment seems to surpass the heavenly planets. It's a trick, because they're not in a position of being contrite. They're in the position of, wow, this is great. And then suddenly everything is taken. But there's a discussion, Maharaj Pritchett asks, hey, wait a minute. And so there's a discussion exactly on the point that you're making. In Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's this discussion where Haridas enters into a prison, and the prisoners all recognize that Haridas is a saint, and so they huddle around Haridas and saying, oh, we're so fortunate to have a saintly person amongst us in this difficult situation. And he says, I give you all a benediction, may you all stay forever in this condition. What's that benediction? He said, no, not in a few days you're all going to be released from prison. So it's not stay in prison, but stay in this contrite position, even when you're no longer in that miserable situation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, circumstances help us, because we're conditioned. Circumstances may help us to be humble. And in that humble, we can self-examine and say, wow, I made some mistakes in my choices, and I need to make better choices. I need to connect with Krishna more. So there's advantages, for sure, of some condition that's difficult. It's easier to say it than it is to wish for it, though, or think that way when it's happening. Julie, you have something?
No, Hare Krishna Maharaj. My question is, what should our attitude be towards material existence?
Material existence?
You said the whole material existence is illusory.
Yeah.
So our attitude towards material existence should be, I can't find a better word to describe it. The word I'm thinking is careless.
It doesn't matter.
Everything is fine. This kind of attitude. Or we should be serious, because what we are doing is to achieve a higher goal.
Yeah. Well, what should our attitude be towards material existence? Very classic.
On the other side, everything is temporary, so it will
come and go.
Yeah, come and go. So why should we be so serious about things we are dealing with?
Well, okay. If you're, let's step back and look at life's mission. This is a good exercise for you, by the way. I mean, for all of us, but for you in particular. step back and what's the mission of life? Is to connect with Krishna. Being in Krishna's shelter. Okay, now Krishna has placed me here in a place that's illusory. And he placed me here because I wanted it. Krishna didn't want it. He advised me, don't go there. But I wanted it. So Krishna made the arrangement, here I am, this illusory existence. Now a little light went on that said, wait a minute, this is illusory existence. Now how should I regard this illusory existence? Well, it's the ultimate mission is, let me be connected with Krishna. But meanwhile, I have this illusory existence all around me. Anywhere I look, up, down, sideways, and backwards, and forwards, and there's illusory existence. It's his, Krishna's energy. So let me, for the ultimate mission, let me see how I can navigate my way through this illusory existence. Not with attachment, but with the mood of seeing how it can be best utilized, engaged in service to Krishna, to connect it with Krishna. So how should I regard it? In one sense, with detachment, but detachment is a byproduct of the mood of devotion in service. And as you said, you concluded it by saying it's temporary. Now you see it, now you don't. But at least the configuration that's in front of me right now, you know, I'm a young woman who's these many years old and I'm studying at Brandeis and et cetera, et cetera, and I'm thinking about my career and, you know, my father's expectation and what do I want and all those things that are part of the illusory existence. Let me not forget the ultimate mission and see how I can utilize those things and those propensities and the expectations of others. How well do they fit in with connecting with Krishna? And then I'll decide to give some weight to this one and to not give so much weight to that one. And all the while, it's temporary, it's illusory, but it's the situation in which Krishna has put me, and I can try to navigate my way through this temporary and make offerings of service to Krishna. It's springtime, there's flowers, so I see some flowers, and rather than, enjoying, let me offer this to Krishna. At least the thought of, so interacting with anything that's around you. So let's, you know, specifically, you know, the service that you have with this group of students, as a for example. So that provides friendship. And it's nice to have friendship. Now, step back, and it's illusory. So the advocacy is not become an impersonalist, to be a personalist. And inside, so there's the higher principle. Let me exercise that higher principle. Inside, there's a spirit soul that's forgotten Krishna. So let me, in this friendship, relationship, along with things that are just social and natural, we care for one another and so forth, there's this higher principle. Let me connect that social with this higher principle of how at least the thought. Here's this journeying soul through who knows how many lifetimes, and here they are with some opportunity, and I'm being given this opportunity in this relationship of friendship to connect the soul to Krishna. And what's the best way to do that? Not like, here I come, white knight in shining armor, and I'm going to, you know, deliver them. But in your relationship with Krishna, how to connect this soul to Krishna in a way that's, you know, comfortable for them and manageable for them. And then all the other points of the illusory thing that's around us. Keep the main mission and if it's Krishna from within, and those that are guiding you will help you understand also. That's Krishna from without. The representatives of Krishna. how to navigate your way through this temporary illusory thing, and know that behind the temporary illusoriness, there's Krishna. It's his energy. And opportunities to serve him are being provided through that temporary energy, the configuration, whatever it is today. Tomorrow could be something else, but what can I do today? If that spirit is prominent, not recessive, but prominent, dominant, then you'll be given intelligence by various means that Krishna gives intelligence, how to properly regard the material existence, temporary material existence, in a way that like you make offerings to Krishna. And that's just by practicing for the spiritual world, because that's what you do in the spiritual world. You offer everything to Krishna. Whatever you do, it's for Krishna. And then that, like you said to the students, I noticed it was very nice. I used to think that spiritual means become peaceful. Now I'm understanding it becomes ecstatic. That's where the ecstasy comes. More than just be peaceful. It's the happiness, the ecstasy of being in a relationship with Krishna, even in this illusory realm. It's just temporary. Now you see it, turn the mirror, it's gone. What happened? You turn the mirror. But meanwhile, you're the spirit, the mood with which you're functioning is how to offer things to Krishna, how to be in my connected with Krishna, my relationship with Krishna, even in this illusory place. Opportunities for service to Krishna, that's what it is. Right? Okay. Last question, and then I'm going to disappear.
Maharaj, when we went through this section, especially the 30th verse where Kapil Dev was saying that a man who is maintaining his family with sinful activities is destined to go to hell and along with his family. Now from Bhagavatam point of view, from absolute point of view, you understand that any budging from the understanding that we are servants of Krishna and engagement in the illusory affairs of life, right? That is essentially within the fold of sinful activities. So from that standpoint, everyone who is not connected with a devotee or hasn't been awakened is kind of destined for hell. Is this understanding?
Well, depends. It's complicated because there's a mix of pious and a mix of sinful. And you know, like we heard here in the sixth canto, there's procedures for prayaschitta, and some persons may engage in some prayaschitta. No, not necessarily. And some persons may be engaged in devotional service. And according to Bhagavad Gita, even a little devotional service will save one from that, and have the opportunity for devotional service in the next life too. So it's not, you know, so cut and dry. Little, you know, there's variables and little complex.
But if we look into the world today, like practically speaking,
abundant sinful activity.
Yeah. And even when I'm looking into my own life, when I'm going to office, the nature of application of those products that are coming out, they're going into all kinds of hands of
you're not responsible
people. So I'm
for that.
Also kind of contributing.
You're not responsible for that. And that this, my understanding at least is, because this question was presented to Prabhupada, and you're not responsible for that. Like one devotee was asking, he got fired, but you know he was earning too much, and they got younger guys and just fired him. He was working for some company that makes caterpillars and tractors and that kind of machinery. So, you know, McDonald's may buy one of those. Mm-hmm. He's not responsible for that. The company can make a decision, well, you know, where do you draw the line? And certainly corporates don't draw that line. The employee of that company is not karmically culpable. But I believe that is my recollection is that Prabhupada was saying, where is there purity in this world? Where is that food that's pure, the air that's pure, the water that's pure, the occupation that's pure, other than, you know, agrarian, you grow your own food, and you're not implicated. But in practically anything else, there's contamination. So, you know, you could become an agrarian or become a devotee. And then your role in the workplace is to, by your devotion, influence bhakti somehow by Krishna's mercy into the lives of others. Every endeavor is covered with some type of fault. So you're not punished for that some type of fault, for example. Okay, I'm going to end. Thank you very much. You're welcome.
Enjoy.